is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, buckle up for perhaps the most anticipated women's Final Four of all time. Tipping off tonight, we got the men tomorrow. Plenty of NFL news continuing to pile in, and the NBA and NHL postseason push is upon us. Needless to say, jam-packed show as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings live from Circa in downtown Las Vegas on a Mike Palm Friday. What's going on, buddy?
Nervous, Stormy. Nervous.
I bet.
What are we, 8.5 hours from tip? 9:30 local time tip in Cleveland for UConn versus Iowa. So I think this is going to be a terrific game and a really tall task for the Iowa women heading into this game. And I know everyone wants him to be a team of destiny, and she needs to get the ring to cement her place and all that. But, you know, this is the best coach of all time. This is John Wooden on the woman's side. I mean, last year they broke their string of 14 consecutive Final Fours. Just think about this. And 11 national titles. He's won 89% of his games. And I think it'll be a terrific game tonight. I really do. I would be shocked if either team got a double-digit lead at any point in this game.
Oh, really? You think it's going to be that tight from start to finish?
I think it's very tight. UConn plays excellent defense. Can they handle the pace? Because Iowa's played at a high pace all year. They want to push the ball. I know they ran two girls at Juju against USC. They're not going to be able to do that against Caitlin because she passes the ball too well. Her court vision's incredible. But this would be a storybook road. It all set up for Iowa. Should they be able to avenge last year's championship loss, then beat UConn, and then beat South Carolina? And that's assuming South Carolina gets by NC State. You know, don't sleep on the Wolfpack. I mean, they killed Texas in that in that regional final, of course, the game with the two different 3-point lines.
Oh, gosh. Which still, like, when you saw visually the new 3-point line when it was put up there, you realized how bad that truly was. Unbelievable. But for NC State, it is interesting watching the parallels on the men's and women's sides, two teams that nobody expected to be there.
I said to Mitch, I said, well, if somebody put up a prop, will the same school get both teams to the Final Four? Would have probably been short because you had UConn as a heavy favorite in the UConn. But two schools, and then if you included NC State with a 3-11, what would have been 500-1?
Well, NC State was, for the men, they were like a 10 seed in the 11 seed. Yep. In the ACC tournament. Okay, yeah. They were like bottom of the barrel.
Virginia
in the tournament.
Hits the free throw, they're out, and they're never even in the tournament, and the coach is fired.
Completely. And then the women's NC State picked to finish eighth in the ACC in the preseason. No. They didn't have a single preseason all-ACC player, and to see what they've done has been really cool. But unfortunately, they got a bit of a tall task today against the undefeated South Carolina Gamecocks.
If you had $1 million, Stormy, and you had to wager it, and it was either the UConn men win the title or the South Carolina women win it, which would you pick? Which is the safer bet?
That's good. I mean, they're both essentially the same price right now to win it all. I think that I would probably go UConn.
Yeah, I would.
Honestly,
too. I would too.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of roadblocks in South Carolina's way. Although Purdue, if they get the friendly whistle with Edie and they and they shoot well from beyond the three, they can beat anybody. But I would also say UConn will have to have a below average game. I mean, this is just, I mean, it's 23-23 and then it's 50-23 against Illinois. Come on.
So that day I'm sitting in my hotel room and I'm, you know, watching the game kind of half and half while I'm working. I look up, I'm like, oh, okay. I thought that there was a score bug glitch when I looked back up at the screen. Like, no way that just happened. They've been so good. And I've said it a couple times this week. Danny Hurley finds a way to motivate this team when there isn't anything. Like, when there aren't things working against him, he finds a way to have that extra chip on the shoulder. And it's just remarkable.
They had the plane. They couldn't get the plane there. Everything's again.
Oh, yeah. The NCAA doesn't want us to win. It's great. But let's go back to the UConn women against Iowa tonight. I was a little disappointed that you're not more excited about today because it is going to be a great game.
I am excited. I'm excited to be here in the book tonight to watch both women's games. But there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you're an Iowa guy.
I said, and I was texting with Mitch mostly during the game, and the guys from Iowa, the radio guys, during the game Monday night. I said, I haven't been this emotionally invested in a game since Duke Carolina in the national semifinal in what was Coach K's last game, right? Basketball's a tough sport to watch, too, when you have a lot on the line, because there's so many. It just goes back and forth. It's not a relaxing watch, the game of basketball. Even football has a pace to it, right? Basketball's a really hard watch. And, you know, LSU hit them with that run in the second quarter and you know, at the end of the first quarter. And I thought, oh, here we go again, right? Because they blew them out in the championship game. It wasn't that competitive. But you want so badly for her to be able to win a championship because what she's done for the game. I mean, I don't think anyone has uplifted their sport the way she has, with the exception, possible exception of Tiger Woods, what he did for golf. And all the eyes that were on golf when he was at the top of his game, right? I mean, it was 10 times the ratings and the betting and all that. She's done that for women's basketball. I do believe it translates to the WNBA as well. I believe, you know, these ticket prices, ridiculous. I mean, but she's going to be a show wherever she goes, right? It'll be interesting, the TV ratings. Will it lift the whole league, or will it just lift? Of course, Indiana's going to be on TV all the time, obviously.
Well, you still get that same type of draw that you get with her in the college game, which, by the way, as soon as you walked in here today, that's the first thing we're talking about, was the ratings tonight. How will those compare to what we saw, which was a historic high for Iowa in the Elite Eight game?
Do you think the timing of day, you know more about TV and ratings and all this, do you think that a Friday night at 8 o'clock is different than a Monday night? Because Eastern time, it's 9:30, right? Friday night, 9:30 Eastern time is different than Monday was.
I don't know how much the time. I mean, sure, I think that there will be an impact there, but yeah. I don't think the timing is as much of an impact as the opponent here today. Like, I think that because of the characters that we had in the Elite Eight game with Iowa and LSU, that was just, it was such a draw. There's been so much like that has been built up over the last calendar year from last year's national championship around that. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what the ratings are going to be for this game, because I'm so highly anticipated. It's going to be such a great matchup. And if we are looking for storylines, I think we have a great one in the fact that Paige Beckers and Caitlin Clark both are in the same class, 2020 class. Gino Auriemma recruited Paige Beckers and did not recruit Caitlin Clark. And I know that's been a fun little story. Even what did Auriemma say? I wrote it down. I hope Caitlin Clark had a personal agenda against LSU. I know there's nothing personal between me and her. I don't need to see her drop 20 on us this weekend, you know?
Well, you know, ahead of the Sweet 16 game, his press conference was, Paige is the best player in the country.
Yeah. He's been walking that back this week, jokingly, which is fun.
And he says, and I've coached the best player in the country more than anybody has, so I'm most qualified to say. And then he says, Caitlin's the best player of all time. I don't know who said. I said, Paige is the... But
so good.
Here came the storylines. You know, every coach in the country came to Dowling and the open gyms to watch her play, but not Gina. Well, he had signed Paige very early in the process and didn't think there was room for them in the backcourt. And he says, he explained it all. But he said, if Caitlin had really wanted to come to UConn, I would have gotten a phone call from her. Okay. And she probably still wouldn't have come to, you know, brought her here.
Well, she even said that she just wanted to say she was recruited by UConn, right? Like, that's a cool, awesome thing in women's basketball to be able to say.
You know, Pat Summitt's last game was a regional final loss to Baylor in 2012. That was the last game she coached at Tennessee. It was in Wells Fargo in Des Moines, and Caitlin Clark was there. And talked about watching Pat Summitt in her last game. And so she's been, very much a student of the game growing up as well.
What do you think of the line where it sits right now? We keep seeing it grow 3, 3.5. You guys are still at 2.5 here at Circa, though.
We are, but we take more of a percentage of sharp money than public money, than most books, right? So I think this might be a game where public Iowa, sharp UConn. I'm very tempted. If I play the game, I will probably look for the best money line on UConn I can find and take a money line, because that's also an emotional hedge.
Sure. I am curious your thoughts on Caitlin Clark's props, because you were talking to me earlier about the last couple of times that she has played UConn in her career. Her points prop is up from 31.5 to 33.5. It's juiced -120. Her threes are juiced -135 to go over 5.5. Her assists, 10.5. Rebounds, 7.5.
I'd rather bet that she has a double-double at -160, right? I think that's the better bet.
I actually bolded that in my rundown. I was going to ask you about it.
Yeah, I think that's the best bet. throw out the freshman game where they got routed in the Sweet 16, but they played in Portland at the Motive Center last year in the final, the Phil Knight tournament, which was a November, you know, pre-conference tournament. And it was a close game. I think they lost by 6 or 7. She had 25 and 6 assists, maybe. I think 33.5 is a lot to ask. You know, why is she so good? Because she makes all those other girls so much better around her, right? Stulke and Marshall and all those. None of those girls is going to play professional basketball. When we talk about these all-time greats and all the greats that came through UConn, they were playing with all other All-Americans. They were all those girls on their team went and played in the WNBA. None of these girls are going to do that. But her court vision, the others have to get their points, right? For Iowa to win tonight, you're going to need to see at least two other players in double figures, maybe two other players with 20. And I think Caitlin's going to need double-digit assists. So I would rather bet the double-double than that. That 33.5 is too high. That number should be more like 30.5.
She has had double-digit assists in 5 of her last 6 games. She's averaging 11.2 assists per game. The only one that she went under 12 was that wonky West Virginia game where they were so good defensively. But yeah, the assists, she's such a great facilitator. So I think that'll get there. The points, to your point, the only game again that she's gone over the posted prop number was the one against LSU where she put up 41. So I'm with you there. A quick thought here before we hit the break. South Carolina, NC State, any feel on the numbers or laying 11.5?
I take the 11.5 here. They've had a couple close calls. Oregon State played them really close for 3 quarters. And remember, Indiana cut a 20-point lead down to 2 in the fourth quarter. And in the SEC semifinals, Tennessee had them beat. I think NC State will stay within the number tonight.
I know South Carolina has had some dominant wins in this tournament, but that one against Indiana, that one, play with their food a little bit, and that one stands out to me. So again, the spread, 11.5 in that one, total 139.5. UConn getting 2.5 against the Iowa Hawkeyes, total 162.5. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, turn the page to a little NFL. We have an update on the Stephon Diggs trade to Houston, that and more when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't checked out the website yet, what are you doing? Go to vsin.com. It's a fresh new look, but all the same great educational content with best bets from all of our experts and hosts, betting splits, exclusive articles. Our March Madness hub is dialed in right now on the men's and women's side. Make sure you head to vsin.com today to get yourself covered. We're back here on the Lombardi Line alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. So you've seen the news in the NFL that Bill Star wide receiver Stephon Diggs is heading to Houston. But what we didn't know until we got off the air yesterday, it was first reported by Adam Schefter, the Texans essentially tore up the last 3 years of Diggs' contract, giving him the ability to leave and be a free agent after this year. He also got a raise for this year. The Texans took the $3.5 million that's guaranteed to Diggs next season, put it into this year, so he's getting 22.5 guaranteed in 2024. A lot of that on the surface, like, you like if you're Houston. That's great. He's fully incentivized to work and have a great year, see what happens after the season. But I also wonder, like, if you're giving up a second round pick for a rental. I don't know. That's the one thing that kind of threw me from this development.
Well, how much do you value the second round pick? I mean, he makes them better in the short term. This sort of speaks to the narrative, right? Better in the short term, but long term, is he a cancer in the locker room? Does he cause problems? And you can walk away from him if you find that to be the case.
Sure.
And if it's not the case, then you can take him long term. Yeah. It a rental on a team that's on the rise, it's not like it's a win now, your window's closing, which is more like Buffalo was last year, right? But this team suddenly goes from having almost no expectations last year now to having these high expectations where they're, you know, really the second tier of in the AFC when you're talking about looking at competing for a title. And they become very interesting, and they're playing a division they should be able to win and get a home playoff game. And you know, how far can it take them? Can they go into a Baltimore in the second round? Can they go into a Kansas City and win a road game in the playoffs?
And they're doing everything to put themselves in the position to do that with their quarterback on his rookie deal still. And you bring in Stephon Diggs to a room with Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Noah Brown, Dalton Schultz. Like, there's a lot of talent there, obviously. Joe Mixon, who you bring in the offseason as well. And then you've got this defensive minded head coach in D'Amico Ryans, who's, you know, manning the ship here, brings in Danielle Hunter to make that group more stout. Like, there's a lot about the Houston Texans that I like. My question with this deal in particular is just, how is Stephon Diggs going to do with all of that other talent around him? Because one of his issues that we clearly saw he had in Buffalo was, I need my touches. I need to get the ball in critical moments. And there are some really good wideouts in that room, as we saw last season.
I think this goes to the question of, do you believe people can change? Can people change?
Well, has he shown you over the course of his career the way he's jumped ships from certain teams that he can? I don't know.
Well, it also gives him a, you know, turns the page and gets a fresh start with people that don't have any preconceived notions. I think there were a lot of feelings behind people dealing with him in Buffalo, including the quarterback and the head coach. And he gets to come into a fresh thing and define himself in a new city on a team that's going to probably make the playoffs and maybe make a deep run. So I think it's, I personally, maybe I'm higher on the trade than most. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good deal for Houston, and I think it's a good deal for Stephon Diggs. And obviously, yeah, it's a good deal. Buffalo wanted him out, right?
Yeah. So well, and I'm like, of course it's a good deal for him. He gets out of a situation he didn't like. He's getting more money this year. And he has an opportunity to be a free agent after this season and potentially sign a long-term deal, whether it be with Houston or elsewhere. So I think there's a lot of good situations for Stephon as long as he performs this year, which he's clearly, again, incentivized to do so. The Texans with this move from 25-1 to 17-1 to win a Super Bowl. They're a bigger favorite now in the division. Their win total at 9.5 is juiced even more. It went up to as far as minus 160. It did come back a little bit to minus 140. Is the value gone now if you're trying to buy high on Houston, or is it still worth a bet in some capacity if you think that they're going to be as good as we're talking about?
Well, I don't know that 17-1 is awful. Obviously, you're at your low point in the market. But if you think this team's going to get a home playoff game and they're going to win it, right, and now you're going to be in the final four in the AFC, so you make the final eight. You know, there's arguments to be made that at that point you've made money on the tickets and depending on the atmosphere. I mean, if you took a team at 17-1 to win the NCAA tournament and they said, and you said, I'm the, you know, they have a great chance to make the Elite Eight, you say, I'm making money off of this ticket, right? Whether they get further or not. I still made money off my Clemson ticket. I bet Alabama on the money line when Clemson was up 10 in the first half at plus 240, right? And so you have those opportunities there. Although, obviously, you know, there's a theory, Stormy, because you didn't get the best price, you should never bet something. I don't agree with that because it may still be a decent price to your handicap.
It's not all a CLV world, okay?
Right, but people say, I'm not going to bet. I'm not going to bet plus five because plus six was available yesterday. Well, plus five might still be the right play today.
Sure.
Right. So
conversely, how do you feel about the Bills side of things? Where this leaves the Bills receiving room now? And granted, it could be addition by subtraction, right? We talk about that a lot. You use that word cancer. They added Curtis Samuel and Matt Collins this offseason with Gabe Davis's departure to Jacksonville. So those two and Khalil Shakir are the only ones in that room that have caught a pass in the NFL last season.
This team just can't get it done, though. I mean, I think their defense is not big enough. And yet they got eliminated from the playoffs. They had the ball three times in the fourth quarter with a chance to win the game. They didn't get it done offensively against Kansas City, right? They had their chances. You know, you go back to 13 seconds. This team just hasn't, for whatever reason, been able to get over the hump. But if I told you you could have Josh Allen, everybody'd say, give me Josh Allen, right? Maybe as much as anybody other than Mahomes. He might be the second most popular quarterback, somebody would say, I'll take Josh Allen to start my franchise, right?
Well, and with that, I've heard a lot of people giving the comparison, well, Patrick Mahomes has won two Super Bowls without a true wide receiver room of named people, mm-hmm. right? But then you also have Travis Kelce, who's like a seven-time all-pro tight end. Dalton Kincaid isn't that. I'm sure they would love it to him to grow and develop mm-hmm. into that, but that's not what they have right now. They are still a favorite in the division in a very interesting AFC East. Where do you see the Bills in this pecking order?
Well, I find the Jets odds to be ludicrous. What is the Jets Super Bowl odds, Steph? I mean, compare what the Jets Super Bowl odds are to Houston. I bet you they're not that far off, which to me, I mean, they were too low, I thought, last year going into the year.
Jets are 20-1, Texans 16-1.
Right. I mean, really? You think that
I said 17-1 earlier, it's gone down even more.
They were about equal, right? Before they got Diggs. Yeah. I mean, the Jets odds were too low last year, and that's before Rodgers' injury. Now he's coming off an injury and he's a year older, right? I can't. How long are we going to keep going with this narrative that there's suddenly this competitive team?
In the last season he played in Green Bay was like the worst he ever had. So, like, I don't know. I get that he was an MVP a year prior to that, but this is a couple years removed now in a major surgery.
Right. These odds are a memory. People are making these odds off a memory of Rodgers, like 38 touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
I said earlier this week that it's the people that are betting this have beer goggles on because of Hard Knocks and all these acquisitions that they've had, that this team's going to be amazing. And it's just not reality, in my opinion.
So it's interesting because we know the Patriots are not going to compete, we would think, right? The Dolphins were suddenly askew of the Dolphins, right? This was a hot team. And
the defense is crumbling before our eyes.
Yeah. And so is it the Bills by default again? Which it just might be, because I don't know if anybody is going to be good enough to beat them. So they may back into that. Not that they're better than they were last year, but the division is worse. All three teams.
Buffalo plus 160, and they have won 4 in a row in the division. So we talk about all the women's Final Four action that's going on in Cleveland. We got some other news coming out of the land that quarterback Deshaun Watson, who's coming off a season-ending shoulder surgery in November, saying, quote, "I'm going to be ready for week one." And I think it's good for him to come out and say he's going to be ready for week one after they made all the additions to the quarterback room. Jameis Winston, Tyler Huntley still have DTR in there, but... like, I don't care if you're ready week one. Are you going to be ready week 5, week 10, week 16, in the playoffs when they need you? Because we haven't seen that at all from Deshaun Watson.
You know, I asked Michael if there was a prop, you know, how many starts would Flacco make for the Colts? And what did he say? Like 6, right? It was a high number. How about if you put that on Deshaun? How many starts is he going to make this year?
It's a fair question.
If it was anything like 9.5, 10, I would go under even those numbers.
Really?
Just because I don't think he's going to be good enough. They've loaded up the quarterback room to be ready if he still hasn't gotten any better.
Because they needed 5 last year.
He's like played one good game in 3 years. I mean, why do we believe he's going to be good?
And it was one good half more than anything. And it happened to be the game that he got injured. Mm-hmm. And that was what was the most fascinating coming out of that game, was that he didn't miss a single. He was every completion made in the second half of that game. They rally from down 2 touchdowns against Baltimore to win. And that was the game he injured his shoulder prior to having the most success that he had all season. That's insane to me.
By the way, I might have gotten more texts about our interview with Mary Kay Cabot than any other interview I've done in 5 years. The Hall of Fame questions, people reaching out about the interesting answers that she as a voter gave about campaigning and about criteria for coaches and that.
The real thing.
It's real.
Yeah. No, that was a really... insightful question by you, and we got a good answer.
She was a very good guest.
I know you had something you wanted to follow up with, but
well, she was so definitive. Yeah. I wanted to lobby for Schottenheimer.
We're gonna hit the break here. We'll be right back talking more college basketball on the men's side. In addition to the standard lines, we've got some futures as well.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on the Lombardi Line, this is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Remember, for a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. All you need to do is go to VSiN.com/splits. Our betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion, not just for today's games, but future events as well. Take advantage of the limited time offer, VSiN.com/splits. 2 weeks free to the VSiN betting splits page. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we'll dive back into a little college hoops conversation because we mentioned earlier the two big favorites that we have on the men's side, Purdue laying 9 against NC State, UConn 11.5, 12, depending on what book you're looking at right now, in that matchup with Alabama as well. But if you have a good feel for these games, and you think you know how things might play out, there's some other opportunity that DraftKings and other sportsbook have in terms of look-ahead lines for that potential championship game, Mike. And when you kind of looked through those 4 potential options, were there any that spoke to you that stood out?
I thought the outcome, which would have the favorite winning all 3 games, Purdue getting beat by UConn in the final at 110 yesterday, now 115, so bet up a little bit. It still has a lot of value to me because of how prohibitive of favorites they are in their semifinal matchups. This is historically the highest combined point spreads of two national semifinals ever, with it being 20 and a half or 21, depending on what this UConn line closes at. What is the 5.5 is the look ahead for that game?
So I think to your point, if you're looking for value and you bet a -115 on UConn just to win that game when they're -5.5 on the look ahead, that makes sense. Although the big differentiator here is with these look ahead lines, if you bet a matchup that doesn't happen, your bet goes away, right? Mm-hmm. So whereas in the exact outcome one, your bet is your bet. So it doesn't matter if Purdue plays UConn or not, it's action.
Yeah. So we would do the math. We can do the math and tell whether that's a good bet or not, because we know what the two money lines are now, and then we can project off of 5.5 and say, are we getting any additional value? Or would we be better off just betting what becomes a parlay in the semifinals and then rolling that into a championship game straight bet on UConn? So, I mean, you just do the math exercises. Sometimes it's better and sometimes it's worse. You know, interestingly, we did that prop UConn and Purdue versus the field. Well, it ended up they were the 1 and 2, so our opposite sides of the bracket. And I believe it closed at like +275 or whatever it closed. Not a huge decision for us, but we wrote a lot of action. But think if you had that now, sure. Either Purdue or UConn. I mean, now it's like what, -$6 when you were getting close to +$3 before?
So obviously we said earlier when you were asking me who I would rather bet between South Carolina on the women's side or UConn on the men's mm-hmm. side to win it all. If I had $1 million, where would I place that bet? We both agreed UConn. But storyline wise, like if UConn goes back to back for the first time since Florida in 07, awesome story. And Purdue with the opportunity potentially to pull a Virginia after getting knocked out in the first round, coming all the way back and defying all the odds and all the Matt Painter haters to get a national championship. Like, I'm rooting for either one at this point. I think it's fun. I just feel like you fade UConn at your own risk at this point with the way that they are winning and dominating teams. Their closest win this tournament has been by 17 points. Their closest win through 10 games, starting with last year's tournament, all of the tournament games to this point, their closest win has been by 13 points. They're winning by an average margin of over 23 in all 10 of those games. It's just remarkable what they've been able to do. And I know they're a big favorite here, but and a lot of people look at that number and it is inflated and they want to take Alabama. I feel like I might just have to stay off of that game altogether with a no bet, because I just don't like the idea of going against UConn with how good they've been. And if Alabama's not hitting their threes, then it's going to be a long day.
I haven't touched a UConn game in the tournament just because, and I talked about spurtability long before they put a 30-0 run on Illinois. I just feel like, let's say you're catching 9 and they're up 4 with 6 minutes to go. I still feel like that 9 is not safe at all. Like there's, sure. You see all these games in the second half, what they do. Your San Diego State team who played a very good first half, and then it just gets away. And all of a sudden, they lose by 30.
Also, can we talk about that? That, like, I was watching the game, like, SDSU's playing pretty well here in the first half. They were still down 10.
They didn't cover 7, and they played a great first half.
Yeah,
right?
Unbelievable. It's just, that's what UConn does. So is there a potential edge maybe on the total here when you see that 161? Is there anything you could do there?
Here's the problem. I mean, UConn can play at any pace, right? Fast, slow. I would say Alabama wants to get up and down the court and UConn will run with them. But in the terms of the math of the game, I mean, you start out with more of an advantage to go under the 161, which is a very high total for a Final Four. Listen, usually because they play these games in big domes, the shooting backgrounds are not great. They tend to be, especially on that Saturday.
The sight lines are all messed up.
The Saturday lower scoring games, as they adjust to it, and the Monday kind of comes back to the mean.
Is that where, and you would know better than I, if this has been a trend in the past, that it's been a successful trend rather, those first half unders in those games because of the sight lines?
I don't know offhand. No. You take all the fouling and nonsense at the end of the game out of it when you play the first halves, but obviously you're giving up something because it's skewed by, you know, if you took the average between the whole game, you're going to go -4.5 or -5 is what will get you the first half total.
In the most outstanding player odds, 4 of the top 5 players on the odds board are all different guys from UConn. Donovan Klingon leading the way, +180, short shot. Zach Edey, the lone non-UConn player for Purdue, +220. The only player that is not on one of these favorites right. teams that's in the wheelhouse is DJ Burns at 20-1. As you look at that odds board, is there anything that you have interest in? It's just, it's so hard because you, if you anticipate UConn playing in the national championship game, winning the game, it could legitimately go to any of them.
And I get why Klingon is the favorite, because if they meet Purdue in the final and he neutralizes Edie, I mean, he's likely to win it. But you're right. Of any team, this is a team not of stars, right? Sure. They're just the sum of their parts and no names, and yet they blow everybody out all the time. It's just a great collection and a well-coached team. And, you know, it takes somebody like Creighton hitting 55% from beyond the arc and hitting 18 threes to beat them, you know? So that's a really tough market to bet into. You know, Sears is interesting at 25-1 if you think they can pull the upset. Obviously, you're getting a much better price than the money line tonight, but then they'd have to beat Purdue or, NC State in the final. Burns, I love the story, but, like, how quickly will he have two fouls in the title game? You know what I mean? Or in this semifinal against Edie. That's the problem. They're big guys. Tennessee, they got no shot. This is whistle, 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 whistle.
Edie has more than 100 like foul shots more than any other player in the country.
20 a game.
It's ridiculous.
20 foul shots a game.
It's ridiculous.
It's tough to watch.
So we talk about those look ahead lines on the men's side. We have some on the women's side as well. South Carolina, a predicted 4.5-point favorite against Iowa, should the favorites win out here. South Carolina also a 6.5-point favorite should they play UConn. And then if Iowa were to play if Iowa were to play NC State, they would be a 6-point favorite. If UConn were to play NC State, they would be a 4-point favorite.
I think those are all pretty reasonable lines. It shows you a little bit more of the balance of the field. Obviously, South Carolina, very highly power rated.
To be a 4.5-point favorite against Iowa, yeah.
Who Iowa was the overall number 2 seed in the tournament, right? So that's the difference between. But it's interesting. Purdue was the number 2, and it's 5.5 to UConn. So you're talking about two prohibitive number 1 overall seeds in the game. If Iowa won and they got NC State, I wouldn't want to lay that many points, because obviously NC State is playing very, very well and they're beating every. I mean, they're going up against knocking out Tennessee. I told you I bet Texas at 20-1. I was feeling pretty good going into that game. Interesting point here, and I did this on no hyperbole about all the things that have gone on in the women's tournaments that it's just been so ridiculous. The official that graduated at Masters from Chattanooga getting replaced at halftime.
The
3-point line. How about the nose ring for Hidalgo and Notre Dame? They all of a sudden enforce it after a quarter in a Sweet Six. Anyhow, those two coaches, so they brought it to their attention 30 minutes before the game and said, you have the option. We can fix the court, but it's going to take an hour and we lose ABC. And both coaches thought it was more important to keep the game on ABC than to fix the court and have it.
He said, we're both going to have to play on that side of the court at some point. Anyways.
And they said, we both won a game with the court like this, because remember, they played five games like that.
Yeah,
there are four games and this was the fifth game. But I thought that was an interesting decision to make. They really didn't want to lose ABC in the national audience, especially the NC State coach who says, we're never going to be on ABC.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I don't blame them at all. Right. Those types of things happening in the women's game also brings me back to a couple years ago, the COVID tournament, when all those videos went viral of the women's gym for the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And it was essentially like a rack of dumbbells and a table.
Yeah.
Like, that was all.
How about having, then they played in Spokane too, right? And they all had to stay in Coeur d'Alene and all the Nazis yelled racial epithets at them. It was awful. I mean, everything surrounding this was just like such Bush League stuff.
So hopefully now with the eyeballs that are on the sport, things start to change for the better. We're going to hit the break here. When we come back, get into a little draft conversation. Draft analyst Thor Nystrom is going to join us coming up.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. The time is now with the Final Four upon us. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Plenty more college hoops to come throughout the course of the show, but this is an NFL program at heart. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you. So let's get into it, because it is draft month officially, top 30 visits season. And to help us get through everything, we welcome in Thor Nystrom on the Progressive Guest Line, NFL draft analyst at Betting Pros at ThorKU on X. Welcome in, Thor. How we doing? This is the time of year you thrive, my friend. I think we... Thor, can you hear us? All right, we will work on getting Thor, but...
The professional football show. Don't sell the UFL short, Stormy.
Oh, thank you.
How'd the opening weekend go?
It was really fun, actually, which we'll get into some draft conversation in a moment when Thor joins us. But yeah, UFL opening weekend... It was a blast. We had some really cool moments. The 64-yard field goal that ended up being a game winner. My game specifically had a punter throw a 40-yard touchdown pass to a 300-pound center, which you don't see that every day.
It's the play of the year in week one.
Yeah, it's just a...
I do like the angle. Fun. And obviously, you're the specialist at this. You bring the betting angle to it. But like in the bottom of the screen, it'll say like, need 11 more points for the over. Like that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's a little, it's personally, like, because of the way that they have things laid out with the spread and total on the score bug, I want that so badly for other sports. Like, when I'm looking at normal score bugs now, I'm just like, oh, I wish there was just like little -2.5 there, because I'm curious about it. And then I got to go check if I haven't seen. And so I like that element of it a lot.
My favorite part is the running clock on the incomplete passes. I just think it keeps the pace of the game moving.
The play clock in general is shorter, too.
Is it going to be, because, you know, at some point I'll probably want to wager on these things from a totals perspective. I don't know if I'll ever get into. But it seems like the great majority of the time they go for two. And then there was a lot of ones in your game. They were just running it in from the two to take the 1 point.
Which actually was interesting to me because two, at least in my time with the XFL last year and the UFL this year, two has been the highest percentage make play. Yeah. And so a lot of teams feel comfortable starting with that. And then toward the end of the game, they'll get strategic with what they might need to do. But yeah, twos are the most common. You're right about my game, though, is a little...
Right,
they were just different. My game was also very odd because it was the one game that I thought had over potential, underswept the board in week one of the UFL. I think it's one of those things where in a league like this, there's so much uncertainty with personnel, and from a continuity standpoint, they had that extra draft last year. So you've got a lot of new bodies, a lot of new faces, coaching staffs moving all over the place. So defenses tend to win out early in these leagues. But my game was DC and San Antonio, and DC was the highest scoring offense in the league last year. San Antonio is essentially the Houston Roughnecks offense from a year ago, because their coordinator and a lot of their talent came over there. So I thought we were going to get like a much higher scoring game, but DC just kept settling for field goals. They were moving the ball so good, had four field goals.
Four in a row.
Thor is on the line with us now, though. Thor, welcome in. Can you hear us now? Are we good?
I can hear you. Yeah,
beautiful. Good to see you guys. Appreciate you. Let's get into some of these draft props, because I know you have been diving all in terms of what's available on the board right now. Do you have a favorite bet, a favorite thing that stands out to you above the rest?
Well, one of them where I bet it a couple of days ago, the odds have moved in the in the way that I bet it. I had gotten total offensive players selected in round one over 20.5 at +120 juice. This was just 2 days ago. And then the flip of that, under 11.5 defensive players at one, also +120. I believe that has gone to now 12 defensive players. And then what would it be? Where the odds have gone in my favor on that. But I'd still be interested in that. But those odds were out for sure.
So I want to talk about, in general, the quarterbacks first round taken. And I'd asked Michael Lombardi a few weeks ago, when there was an outside rumor there might be six, if Bo Nix made it. Right now we see most numbers 4.5 juiced highly over. If it got to 5.5, it would be juiced highly under, with 5 being the common number. Is there a chance, would you take 6 quarterbacks taken if you could get over 5.5 at, say, +250? Or do you think 5 or 4 are the number?
I would have to get really juiced odds to do that. I'm sort of on the opposite end of that, where I still think it's going to be four. You know, this is the time of the year every single cycle where the one dude starts getting the hype of being the first round pick. Last year at this time, it was Hendon Hooker. Oh, he's going to go in the first round. He's not going to get beneath 29. He's not going to get beneath 30. And that seems to be what's happening with Penix. There's also been smoke with Bo Nix to the Broncos. And that would be an egregious decision to take Bo Nix at 12. If you're going to overpay, why wouldn't they pony up their draft picks to try to compete with the Vikings offer to move up the board? I still think that those guys are going to go on day two. Penix could go at the very end of round one. I would be stunned if we got six quarterbacks in round one.
A lot of people have been tying him to the Raiders, and I know he had his visit here in Vegas yesterday, but you don't think that that would be a reasonable get for them?
In terms of Penix to the Raiders? Yeah, I mean, I where they're picking, I just don't. I don't see how you justify that. You have the one quarterback you gave the two-year contract to. You have O'Connell, and then, you know, as the backup, and then you have all kinds of holes around the rest of the roster. I could see the Raiders trying to, you know, engage about trading up. Obviously, the coach of the Raiders helped bring Jaden Daniels to Arizona State when he was coming out of high school. But Penix, that would be a pretty egregious overdraft. If there's a candidate to overdraft someone in the first round, a quarterback, it would be Sean Payton and the Broncos if they get boxed out of moving up.
Thor, on several people's draft boards that do this professionally, Marvin Harrison is the number one player overall, not just at wide receiver. But I think there's a lot of value in Malik Nabers to be the first overall receiver taken because of this name recognition of Harrison. What chance do you give and what price would you need on Nabers to be first wide receiver taken?
Yeah, and that is pretty juicy. And I have sniffed around that one because is it 4-1 right now for Nabers to be wide receiver one? Like somewhere in that final 4-1, 5-1. I mean, like where the odds are there, you could wet your beak on that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go crazy because I still do think it's going to be Harrison, but the implied odds there, I could see the team leading the dance on that, ending up going with Nabers. And so with the juiced odds, you can consider that one. You definitely cannot bet Harrison at the price that he is at.
For first non-quarterback right now, he's a $5 favorite. Malik Nabers has come down a little bit, though, to 3-1, but still, you know, positive number there. In terms of offensive linemen, you talk about the over on offensive players. It's supposed to be a really good draft for offensive linemen, offensive tackles, wide receivers, the list goes on. But the 9.5 prop set there, +110. And then Notre Dame's Joe Alt, your top ranked offensive lineman, he's -350 to be the first offensive lineman off the board. But I'm curious about him specifically as it pertains to the number 5 pick. He's 5-1 there. The Chargers are selecting there right now. If they don't move out of that spot, given all of the talk that Jim Harbaugh has talked about getting O-line, would you prefer to bet Joe Alt or an offensive lineman to go to the Chargers?
I love that you're asking this because I actually bet the Joe Alt at 5 prop. Oh. I feel like that price is so good. If the Chargers are stuck there, they're not the ones that get the trade down, you know, Vikings or the Broncos trade with the Cardinals. Then, you know, Jim Harbaugh said the thing of then we would have the first pick in the draft. What about Jim Harbaugh's background leads you to believe that he would take a receiver with the first non-quarterback pick? He builds all of his teams at the offensive line. It was everything he was talking about at the owners meeting, which has been his prerogative going back 25, 30 years. I think if they had their druthers, they're taking the couple first round picks to move back, and then they're going to be picking the offensive lineman. I think the receiver position for them is more of a day two thing. The receiver position is stacked this year, but Harbaugh, that's just not the way that he builds his teams. He wants that offensive line to get better. I think Joe Alt at 5, where the odds are right now, is a very good value.
Or overall, I just want to, as a macro topic in betting the draft, these markets move so quickly, right? I mean, who's going number two? It's Daniels and it's May. It's Daniels and it's May. Can you make money just waiting to take a plus price on these markets, two-way plus price? And because it changes so quickly.
It's a great question. People will ask me about like a specific draft, like, you know, buddies will text me and, you know, this and that. But like to me, what I do is more spraying the board when I see advantageous prices throughout the spring. And then you end up just having all these juiced odds once you get to draft night. But yeah, I'm betting different outcomes. Like I have tickets on McCarthy at 2, 3, 4, 5 to a couple different teams. And then some of these other prospects, doing the same thing where you're basically guaranteeing yourself a profit if he goes within this band that you feel pretty confident about.
We got to hit the break, Thor, but 15 seconds. Do we make history quarterbacks 1 through 4?
I think there's a decent shot of it. I'll say yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Thor, you're awesome. Thank you so much
for the time.
Thank
you.
Appreciate it, guys.
That's Thor Nystrom. Check out all the great work over at Betting Pros as well as on X at ThorKU. We'll be right back resetting for hour 2 on the Lombardi Line. All the need to know information for the Final 4 tonight and tomorrow. We'll be right back.